Hey guys, and welcome to episode 120 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now in this episode, I got back on a listener favourite, and that is Dr. Stephen Phillipson. Now, Stephen and I wanted to both talk about OCD and OCPD, which are two very different disorders. And the reason I'm going to talk about them is to kind of really outlay the difference between the two. Obviously, the media and then the public pick up this idea of I'm so OCD, which causes stigma, it causes misconceptions, it slows down or takes longer for people to get a diagnosis or seek the right treatment because they don't know they have OCD, because they think OCD is just about neatness or orderliness. And even though the media talks about, you know, this orderliness, this neatness, it's closer to the diagnosis of OCPD, but even the media is doing people with OCPD a disservice. So in this episode, we talk about what OCD is, what it isn't. We talk about what OCPD is, obsessive compulsive personality disorder, compared to obsessive compulsive disorder. We also talk about whether OCPD should be named something different to help separate or make that distinction clearer, which may remove some stigma from both disorders. So it was an interesting episode, and we get into general sort of OCD stuff as well. I always learn a lot when I chat with Stephen, so I think you're going to enjoy this one. So anyone who's new to the world of OCD or OCPD or the stigma around I'm so OCD, I think you're going to learn a lot. And if you have OCD or OCPD, I think this will help clear up the difference between the two. And hopefully both those diagnoses won't get tangled up and won't get stigmated within the media anymore, because they're both troubling and serious conditions. And as I mentioned, Stephen is a listener favourite, and I encourage you to go back and listen to some of the other episodes if you want to get a feel for what he's about and hear some of his information. But a bit of background on him: he is a clinical psychologist operating out of the state of New York, and he specialises in the treatment of OCD. Don't forget, you can now become a member of the OCD Stories, where you'll get exclusive episodes each month, extra articles, and much, much more. So if you want to join the tribe, be part of the community, head over to theocdstories.com/join. That's theocdstories.com/join. So without further ado, here is Stephen. Welcome back to the show, Stephen.
Thank you, Stu. It's always good to see you. You're my favorite interviewer.
Thank you. Do you have many?
Just two others.
Well, I appreciate it. Okay, cool. So, it's always a pleasure to get you back on, but one of the reasons for having you on again is to try and break down the misconceptions around OCD. Okay. Obviously, many people listening to this show obviously know what OCD is. They most likely have it. The clinicians listening most likely fully understand it. But assuming that people listening to this, they've never heard my podcast, they've never really come across OCD, but for whatever reason they're listening, we're going to kind of get into breaking down some misconceptions. So the first one, the big one in the media, both in America and in the UK and obviously other parts of the world, is this phrase of I'm so OCD. And I'm not sure if there's other phrases that go about in America.
Yeah, no, I'm so OCD about X. I'm so OCD about straightening my room. I'm OCD about making my bed. Doing a paper. I think that there's a tremendous misconception, I think, in the general public in the use of that phrase in terms of mistaking perfectionistic standards or rule-bound thinking for the anxiety disorder of OCD.
Okay. Yeah, no, thanks for breaking that down. So I guess before we go into what is OCD and what's OCPD, why do you feel that this misconceptions happened and also become so ingrained now in culture?
I think a large part has to do with the media's misinformation in the way that they often portray OCD on shows like Monk. Yep. Or the movie As Good As It Gets with Jack Nicholson. I think that they portray OCD as this kind of perfectionistic quirkiness as opposed to the actual condition, which is probably a lot less entertaining. Also, the show Matchstick Men, the movie Matchstick Men, has a gross misportrayal, and the movie The Aviator, which was even tragically advised by a very well-known psychiatrist, also, you know, portrays OCD in this grossly misinformed way. I mean, the actor, what was his name?
What was it? Leonardo DiCaprio.
That's the one. Yeah, it was a portrayal of Howard Hughes, who was at that point the richest man in the world. And, you know, here he is over time engaging in behavior like hoarding his own urine, which that might have happened, but certainly that's more of a hoarding potential than it is an OCD behavior. And I think Howard Hughes probably had some contamination OCD. I think all over time he became afraid of being poisoned by food. And so he went from having a hesitation to shaking people's hands to having hesitation to eating things that he couldn't be guaranteed were not poisoned. So that certainly is a form of OCD that kind of got way out of control. But clearly the person who was portrayed in that movie had a lot more things going on than your classic OCD patient. So I think that the media is really responsible for creating this misconception.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And sometimes it just takes one big film to do it wrongly, and then people pick it up. They don't no longer check to do research. They just assume it's a fact.
I would agree. Yes.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, I'm sure we're all guilty of it to some point in our lives. But okay, so what is OCD?
Yeah, it's funny because the D in OCD really stands for disorder. And to have OCD, it means that your life is sufficiently disrupted such that it creates a large impairment in your day-to-day functioning. There's a lot of what I would call life-altered paths that are disrupted in terms of like employment, in terms of relationships. There's a significant amount of time invested in ritualizing, whether that means standing at the sink for hours on end, spending a lot of alone time in one's own head, ruminating and ritualizing, going to others for reassurance. The D of OCD means that a person's life is significantly interfered with and impaired. And so to have something that most people would say, you know, I'm OCD about X, they're really referring to what I would call a quirk, which is a minor life intervention. Like if a person is wearing a solid navy blue jacket or a sweater, and if they have lint on it, I have a quirk where I will go over and pick off the thread or lint because I prefer the field of the navy blue to be kind of perfectly unimpaired. And if you give me a dime or what you might call a one pence, I could easily avoid picking off the lint and leaving it in its imperfect state. But it's just something that I kind of quirkily will go over and perform that behavior with sort of a bit of amusement. So I think that, you know, the idea of a quirk where we have this kind of funny little behavior that is sort of a slight deviation from our life path, but done more for a creation of mild, a relief of mild discomfort versus, you know, OCD is a huge storm of distress that people engage in extreme life-altering rituals to alleviate.
Okay. No, thank you for that and for emphasizing the D. The O and the C, for those that are really unfamiliar with it, how would you describe those?
Sure. So the O, the obsession, is the idea, the concept, the cognition of there being a threat. So the idea that maybe one has, you know, the three popular O's of the universe are religion, sex, and violence. So the idea that maybe I've done something that violates God's will, maybe I'm engaging in or having inappropriate sexual thoughts, or maybe I am potentially capable of harming others or myself. Those are the three big ones. But obviously, those are just a fraction of the endless variety of topics under the OCD umbrella. So first is the obsession. Next is the compulsion, which involves the disruption in one's life in undoing the obsessive concern. The escape, as it were, is the C of OCD. It's the effort to neutralize or minimize the risk factor from the obsession. So to pray that God is forgiving, to reassure oneself through research or mental rituals that one will not commit a harmful act, or to prove that one is not guilty of being some type of a sexual deviant. So that's really the C of OCD. And obviously, once again, the D is that these two phenomena, the obsessive and the compulsive component, create an extreme disruption of one's life's freedom.
Yeah. No, thank you for that breakdown. And earlier you said it was an anxiety disorder. Am I right in saying the DSM removed it? Well, they did remove it from the anxiety category.
Yeah, but were they wrong? The DSM is written by a bunch of psychiatrists. Yeah. And I'm a psychologist. Yeah. I've got a PhD, not an MD. So I have a research degree, and I still favor the last version of the DSM that classifies OCD under the umbrella of an anxiety disorder. So I don't agree with this last definition of putting OCD as a separate category. So I'm still going to call it, based on my own definition over 30 years of being a specialist, I will still refer to it as an anxiety disorder. Although it's kind of interesting because OCD really has four main emotions that it manipulates sufferers with. Anxiety is the most pronounced and most predominant emotion. Number two is actually guilt. And so the idea, let's say one has an intrusive thought about some inappropriate concept with God, or inappropriate ideas about religion, or inappropriate ideas about sex or violence, people can be as equally manipulated to engage in the compulsion by the experience of guilt as anxiety.
Yeah.
The two lesser forms of OCD that can equally manipulate a person are depression and also anger. I describe some spikes, some intrusive thoughts, kind of like a person is engaging in a great deal of effort to undo the spike or the intrusive thought. And they might get interrupted or interfered with in that rumination process. And that can provoke a tremendous amount of anger and frustration, because in their mind, they're just about to extricate themselves from the danger or the risk. And the interference, you know, creates a sense of an undoing. And so they feel like they need to kind of start from the beginning. So yeah, the four emotions are anxiety predominantly, guilt number two, depression number three, and anger number four.
Yeah, no, thanks for that. I knew that question would get you hot and bothered, so that's why I asked it.
Well, I didn't. I'm not so bothered by it. It's just it's just a political thing, and psychiatrists and psychologists often, at least in this country, don't see eye to eye, and that's just one area. So the DSM is the Bible of psychiatry, and we use it a great deal in psychology. But for myself, at least, it's not my singular definition of certain terms.
Yeah, no.
The word Asperger's, and I forget how you guys pronounce it. Very funny.
We say the same. Yeah.
I Yeah, no, you guys pronounce it.
Asperges, we say.
Yeah, that's the one. Right. Yeah, that's different than I'm saying as a New Yorker. But so, yeah, Asperger's has been removed also, and they now call it autism on the spectrum. Yeah. So there are a number of changes that I don't always concur with.
Yeah, no, a fair point. And I agree it should still be an anxiety disorder, because if you remove the anxiety or the guilt or whatever the emotion is, the thoughts become way easier to ignore, way easier to not do the compulsion. It's the emotion that drives it. And if you Absolutely. Remove that, you Right. destroy OCD almost.
That's right. Now, I always tell people, you know, that the cognitive associations that exist within all humans are, as I say, 85 to 90%. I think it's just a 10% lie about it. But, you know, these associations that occur within our human brains without the disruptive emotional component, it's you know, a 3 second a moment of heebie-jeebies, of slight distress, and without the tsunami, you know, of distress from the emotional component, these are thoughts that just come and go and are very, very easily managed. So I couldn't agree with you more that it's really these the anxiety, the guilt, the depression, or the anger that are the driving force of the condition.
Absolutely, yeah. And I always quote this study. I really need to dig it out. But it's something like 95% of the population have intrusive thoughts.
Yeah.
Because there's no emotional response there. It doesn't stick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that the emotional response is more of a 2 to 3 second event, you know, of, as we would say, the heebie-jeebies. When I have an intrusive thought, for about 1 or 2 seconds, my body kind of shakes, and then I'll just say to my brain, hey, thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
The event is over, and I just kind of move on.
Mm. Yeah, good point. Okay, so in the media, you could argue that what they refer to when they say OCD is more closely linked, although not linked, is OCPD.
Right.
If we had to put it in one of the two fields, that's probably where they got the misconception from. Although I think the media even does people with OCPD a disservice, but it'd be good to hear what is OCPD and how does it differ?
Sure thing. So I wrote an article in my website of OCDonline.com because this question was asked 20 years ago in a very, very common way. People were very, very confused by the difference. So I wrote an article called The Right Stuff. And basically, OCPD is a condition where there is, as I call it, a disruption or a defect of philosophy. It's an extreme over-attachment to concepts of perfectionism and concepts of control. So the person with OCPD, or as I like to call it, perfectionistic personality disorder, or as some of my patients call it, PPD, there's a desire to get things to be without flaw, to do things until a person has achieved a sense of there being no chance for any imperfections. And I certainly don't believe that that's possible. I consider to be any desire or any goal for perfectionism to be disruptive and detrimental. To me, everything is flawed, everything has the potential for improvement, and everything is imperfect. And so there are some wonderful sayings related to perfectionism where perfect is the enemy of good. And I certainly agree with that. I think good is good enough, and the striving for perfection is a huge disruption in a person's life. So the idea of a person working excessively to achieving the idea of finding an answer, which to me, as much as most people on the planet think answers exist, I actually enjoy living in a universe that I don't believe answers do exist. I think what we have as a scientist is what we would call the best guess at this time. Mm. But the perfectionist is very much attached to the idea of finding an answer. And it's interesting because certain intrusive thought themes tend to really be married to perfectionism, and some of the themes that I found most readily attached to people who share what we call a comorbidity of OCD and OCP are people, believe it or not, with HOCD or homosexual spiking, or as I call it, a gay spike, and also people with ROCD, people who have relationship substantiation interests where they're trying to figure out and come up with an answer, you know, am I with the right person, or am I seeking the correct gender in terms of my sexual preference? Also heavily related to perfectionism are people who have what are called neutral obsessions, people who are aware of their own breathing in an excessive way, people who are aware of their blinking and their swallowing, and sometimes people who are aware of like floaters in their eye. The idea can often be that being aware of these concepts is incorrect to the way that a human should be or should be thinking about. Like, we shouldn't be aware of our own thinking, our own breathing, blinking, swallowing. And so the idea of the should in the world, the idea of correctness, of shoulds, so there's a tremendous amount of rule-bound thinking with perfectionism. The idea that I know the way the world should be and the way the world shouldn't be. And so along with perfectionism, there's also a large component for many people, not all, of what I call truth owning. The idea that a perfectionist has an understanding and a definition of the way the world should function, the way people should function, the way themselves should function. And so perfectionists often impose a tremendous amount of rule-bound thinking on their own life systems. Sometimes they impose a perfectionistic standard on other people's behavior. And they often possess a very rigid concept of things such as laws, religious correctness, or moral or ethical or even political correctness. So you don't want to get involved in a discussion or a debate with a perfectionist around religion or politics. They often, or many other subjects that involve a right or a wrong, they will often become very heated and very unaccepting of differing ideas. So a perfectionist has a very difficult time getting things accomplished. They often will leave tasks incomplete because bringing them to their perfect end is an impossible task. And so they'll often begin tasks, but not really come to an end with them, because achieving a perfectionistic outcome is impossible.
Yeah, no, thank you for that breakdown. With OCD, the predominant emotion is anxiety. Is there a dominant emotion with OCPD?
That's a good question. I think there are predominant emotions with OCPD. Unfortunately, one of them can often be anger, because when the world doesn't line up with what a perfectionist set of standards involve, they can become fairly intolerant to those differences. So anger can be one. And number two, I would say, would be worry. There's a condition under one of the six anxiety disorders called GAD, or generalized anxiety disorder, which I think, you know, in terms of being political, is also another very stupid term within the DSM, because generalized anxiety disorder is really a condition of worry rather than anxiety. And worry, as opposed to anxiety, is the excessive attachment to being in control of circumstances that are out of control. And so we might worry about where we're going to get accepted into college. We might worry about our financial welfare. We might worry about whether our significant other is being faithful. And it's interesting, because a lot of people will ask me almost in a ritualistic way, whether their intrusive thought is a worry thought, meaning a realistic concern, versus a spike or an intrusive thought, which is an anxiety-driven concern, which is like, you know, a one in a billion. Like catching AIDS from a doorknob is OCD, and you know, whether or not a biopsy comes back as cancerous would be a worry condition if one's, you know, kind of stays up the night and loses sleep over it. These are realistic concerns, realistic threats that a person has, once again, this overattachment to getting the answer for. So worry as an emotion, anger as an emotion, and sometimes even, once again, you can have a guilt reaction with OCPD because it's a very rule-bound kind of way of living. And so when one breaks the rules, one can often feel a significant amount of guilt or regret or remorse from that behavior.
Yeah. No, thank you for that breakdown. That's interesting. Okay, so with you mentioned there PPD, is it perfectionist personality?
Personality disorder, yeah. That's okay. Correct, yeah.
Would there be any worth in, would you think it'd be beneficial to rename OCPD to something along the lines of that to help break down the misconception?
I do. And I think that there is a great deal of confusion and misconception because OCD or OCPD are sort of lined up so frequently and mistaken so frequently. Yeah. I think that to call it perfectionistic personality disorder is a lot more of an accurate and descriptive understanding of the condition.
Cool. Yeah, no, I thought I'd ask that. Yeah, I mean, but judging by what you've said, you know, although what the media and people on Twitter, and they talk about OCD often mean more likely OCPD, I think they still dramatically get it wrong, even if it were to be closer to OCPD. They're still doing those people a disservice. So, yeah, maybe classifying the two a bit better. But I know from what I heard, the DSM, the panel for personality disorders, are always disagreeing, can never make up their minds on.
Yeah. Personality disorders are a lot more of a loose definition than more of what we call the axis one or an anxiety disorder. But I think that there are distinctly different personality disorders. And as a behaviorist, we don't really place a lot of weight or relevance on personality diagnoses other than for certain predictive features. So if you're working with perfectionists, you are going to be pretty confident to predict that they're going to be, you know, kind of very rule bound, that they might be very judgmental. Mm. And so working with them, you definitely want to, as I often do at the beginning of treatment, say things like, hey, when I make a mistake, and I'm definitely going to, I really want you to point out things that you observe that are in contrast to the way things should be. And I say, you know, I'm the thickest skinned person you'll ever meet, so I will not take anything you give me feedback on personally, but it will be very valuable information in terms of observing how you relate to the world, how you relate to other people, and what you pick up on your radar as being substantively in contrast to your own rules and standards.
Okay. No, thank you for that. I don't suppose this is more my personal curiosity. In terms of the DSM, which came first or which was documented first, OCD or OCPD? Obviously, they obviously coexisted at the same time for eternity, but...
I'm a clinician, Stu, so yeah. You're asking me a wonderful question in terms of the history of psychology, which I'm by no means
not a historian.
So I'm sorry, I can't even begin to answer that question, which came first. They to me definitely coincide, mm-hmm. and they can coexist. And I think that it's an important it's an important distinction to be able to make, not only for the patient's perspective and awareness, but also for the clinician, because, you know, to me, I tell people OCD is like a tornado. It's a very compact and very intense condition that has a lot of destructive capacity. And OCPD I call more of a hurricane, which I know England doesn't really suffer from that much, but it's a much more broad storm. It's a much more widespread condition because it impairs so much more of one's quality of life. It really is something that a person carries with them. Like, you know, if someone with contamination OCD is not touching the doorknob or not going in the public bathroom, they can pretty much avoid triggers. But with OCPD, you kind of take with you these rules and these standards, you know, every step that you take. And so they can coexist, and it's an important distinction to make. It's important differential diagnosis to make if one has one or the other or both.
Okay. No, yeah, thank you for that. So I guess the big question then is how do we, as clinicians, as people with OCD, as therapists, how do we tear down this misconception around around OCD and ultimately OCPD?
I mean, I think that it just through, you know, education is really the only way. And I think that, you know, through broadcasts such as your own, you know, and through other, you know, growing media awareness, that these misconceptions are being broken down. But still, there's a tremendous amount of ignorance. And I think that for the general population, saying things like, you know, I'm so OCD about X, is just going to continue because it's just sort of a fad. And, you know, in the 80s, everyone was hypoglycemic. And then in the 90s, everyone had fibromyalgia. Now everyone is gluten intolerant. And everyone is OCD about something or other. Yeah. So, you know, these kind of public diagnoses come and go. I assure you, in 5 or 10 years, everyone's going to be concerned about some other diagnosis more than OCD.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's a good glimmer of hope there then.
Yeah. Just through the fading with time of it being a popular diagnosis.
Yeah. 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 Everyone is gluten intolerant as well at the minute. Even I did a test for it.
Yikes. And everyone has fibromyalgia.
Yeah.
And those things don't really exist either, but it's just a popular reason to have a lot of aches and pains.
Yeah. Okay. No, thank you for that. And I think this is going to be, there's obviously been good points in here to people who fully get OCD. But also I think for new listeners, and I obviously would have tried to put this out in the press, hopefully to get some more understanding. So hopefully it's been educational and entertaining for them.
I always try to find those too.
Yeah. as always, you know, thank you for coming on.
You're more than welcome.
So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Dr. Stephen Phillipson. I learned a lot, as usual, off him. Quick disclaimer, this podcast is not therapy, is not a replacement for therapy, and nor should it be. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And if you want to find out more about OCD, head over to one of the charities, IOCDF, OCD Action, OCD UK, etc., to find out more information there. And if you don't forget, if you want to become a member, get more exclusive episodes, and much, much more, head over to theocdstories.com/join. Until we speak, take care, and I hope to speak to you next week.